A group of religious leaders met with a prominent politician. They had a one-hour meeting that was scheduled. Well, after an hour, they didn't come out of the meeting. It went on for another hour, and in fact, it went on for the entire day, which got the media and the press kind of interested about what was going on. The politician emerges then in the evening from the meeting and reported a great success. With a bounce in his step, he left and said, "I'm off to see my family, and I want to say that we had 80% agreement on all the issues we talked about." Well, then the religious leaders, they all came from the meeting, and they were all haggard and tired and discouraged, and they proclaimed the meeting a failure. Well, the media questioned them and said, "Well, it was just announced that it was a great success, and you had 80% agreement." And the leader says, "Well, we were addressing the Ten Commandments." That's all I can get out of you, really? Is this a kind of a groan? But what do we make of the Ten Commandments? There's been much discussion about how they apply to our lives. How are we to understand them? We begin by looking at covenant, because covenant makes up the entirety of our scriptures. The Old Testament, the New Testament, are actually the Old Covenant and the New Covenant. A history of promises that God had made to His people that were fulfilled in the Messiah that we know as Jesus of Nazareth. As we discussed last week, the covenant was established at one time with Abraham. A covenant that was cut. We understood that with that covenant, it was one between parties of unequal standing. And we recognize that God is obviously the greater of the two parties. And as was the practice of cutting a covenant and walking that blood path, it is God alone who walked the path. Abraham, filled with a darkness and a dread, realized that he could never uphold his side of the covenant. And so it was God who walked that blood path, assuming the failures on the part of humanity, on the part of all the people for the generations to come. The greater party determines the content of covenant. There are obligations for each. There are penalties and there are benefits. Think, for example, between a relationship between the parent and the teenager. Many of us can relate to that relationship. And that relationship is filled with covenants, promises that are made from each party. But, important to recognize, the greater party is the parent. The lesser party is still the teenager. It is the greater party that does things like sets the curfew. It is the greater party that determines what is acceptable behavior and establishes the standards. What will take place when there are failures on either part, and the successes that will result in greater responsibilities and greater freedom. We read now of this covenant history between God and His people being passed through Moses. And it again follows a pattern that is common and is understood of the people of the day. There is a summary of the covenant, and there is the covenant document itself. The summary we know as the Ten Commandments. The covenant itself is the first five books of our scriptures. We know them as the Pentateuch. In Jewish traditions, they would be known as the Torah. And in this covenant, it describes the extent of God's love for His people. Of how the people are to relate to God and how the people are to relate to one another. It describes God's desire to restore the relationship that sin, that our sinfulness, consistently tries to destroy. But how time and time again it is God who is faithful to that covenant and sets about restoring it and making it right and reconciling us to Him. And so if we look briefly of the covenant and of the summary, we can see how it is structured. There is the preamble that identifies the greater party. In the Torah, we have the stories of the Creator and creation. The greater party is obviously the Creator. The lesser party would be the creation. We are creatures of that Creator. In the Ten Commandments, it begins, "I am the Lord your God." And there it establishes and identifies the greater party. Martin Luther says then, "It is the Lord your God who we are to love and trust above all things." The covenant would then continue with the historical prologue. And in the Torah, there are stories that point to this point of history, point to this time when Moses is leading the people through the wilderness, about ready to enter the promised land. The stories of the garden, of the flood, of the cutting of the covenant with Abraham, even the Exodus, they are now pointing to this point of where the people are in their relationship with God. The commandments sum it up by saying, "The voice of God, I brought you out of Egypt, out of slavery. I have brought you to this point." In Exodus, you read about how God says, "I have heard the voice of my people crying." God is in relationship with His people and hears their voice. There was a commuter flight sitting on the tarmac at the airport. All the passengers were aboard. It was a full flight. They were awaiting the arrival of the pilots. The pilots came up the rear stairs of the plane, and then they walked up the aisle to the cockpit. One of the pilots was using a white cane. The passengers, of course, noticed this. The second pilot had a guide dog. And each of them, their eyes were covered by large sunglasses. A rumbling arose amongst the passengers. "Is this some type of joke?" So they begin to talk amongst themselves. But the plane is prepared for leaving. It goes to the runway and accelerates down the runway. There is a renewing of collective concern amongst the passengers. And as they approach the very end of the runway, there is a collective scream that rises from the cabin. And the plane pulls up and they are airborne. Then the co-pilot is overheard saying to the pilot, "You know, one of these days the passengers aren't going to scream. And we're going to get killed." But God hears the voice of His people. And that brings them to this point of time with Moses. I have heard you, God says. And God reacts. We have the commandments, but also we have throughout the Torah, 613 requirements of the people are spelled out. The number of obligations that God places on Himself are far greater. That is the type of relationship that God has set with His people. But we are given the commandments then to help us to relate to God and help us to relate to one another. We look at Martin Luther's emphasis of how we are to look at them, how they are to apply to their life, how they summarize the covenant that God has made with us, how they are to benefit us. They are short and easily read so that we can remember them. So if I were to ask you just offhand what the eighth commandment was, you would know right away, right? Everybody looks down.
No, don't come off.
They're a false witness, by the way. But it represents the total relationship. Do not take my name in vain, it says. And Luther adds then, we are to call upon God for all things and in all times. Call upon God. Use the name of God. Use the relationship that God has established. Remember the Sabbath, it is said. And Luther adds, hear the word and gladly hear it. Make it a part of your life. Honor your father and mother. Hold them in esteem, it is emphasized, the relationship that we have. Hold them in esteem. Thou shalt not kill, but also then to help and to befriend. Do not commit adultery, but to love, to honor in our relationships. Do not steal, but rather to improve and protect what belongs to one another. Do not bear false witness. And beyond that, speak well of. And Luther says, use the best construction of your words and how you speak of one another. Do not covet, but serve your neighbor in keeping all that is your neighbor's. Serve your neighbor. And so that's how Luther establishes the covenant. And how it affects our lives, our relationship with God, and our relationship with one another. I came across this comic. Moses saying, but if we follow these rules, we'll stick out like a sore thumb. And we will. We would stick out like a sore thumb in the society, in the world in which we live. We have this covenant summary that is given to Moses that we know as the Ten Commandments. Traditionally, it is shown whether there are two copies of the Ten Commandments. Traditionally, in the covenant, there are two copies that are made, one for each party. And it is shown with Moses that he has two tablets. And we often think of those as, well, they're five on one and five on the other. But following that tradition, in reality, there are two copies of that summary, two copies of those Ten Commandments, and both are given to Moses. What does this show? What does this mean to us? Is that God does not need the reminder of the covenant. God doesn't need the summary. God is faithful to that covenant and to that relationship and to those promises. And ultimately, as we see in Matthew, Jesus says, I have come to fulfill the law. I have come to fulfill the covenant. I have come to fulfill the payment of your penalties. Because the covenant had been secured by God with a sinful people. And God gives His own life to fulfill the penalties for their failures.